Hey y'all, how's it going? I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Coming up on the show, we're going to have Jacob Hornberger from the Future Freedom Foundation, who's got a great piece on Let the Impeachments Begin. Hear, hear. And then I'm working on getting Ramsey Baroud on because he wrote a very well-informed piece about the Civil War breaking out, attempted coup d'etat consolidation there going on in Libya right now. And part of the blowback, part of the results of America's war there 3 years ago. But most of the show today, I think, is going to be this poached interview from NBC News of the American hero Edward Snowden.
Ed,
a lot of people would say you have badly damaged your country.
I'd say, can you show that? Is there any demonstration? Because I've been asking the United States, the press has been asking the United States government for a year now. If after a year they can't show a single individual who's been harmed in any way by this reporting, is it really so grave? Is it really so serious? And can we really trust those claims without scrutinizing them? I'd argue that we can't, but we should be open to it. It's fair. The possibility exists. And if this has caused some serious harm, I personally would like to know about it.
Former NSA Director Keith Alexander has said, you have done, quote, significant and irreversible damage to the nation. He said there is, quote, concrete proof that terrorist groups and others are taking action and making changes, and it's going to make our job tougher. And this amounts to telling our enemy our playbook.
So what's interesting is that we see the exact same language, the exact same accusations being leveled against whistleblowers, being labeled against any critic of any government program throughout history, throughout time.
What are you doing in Russia?
All right, so this is a really fair concern. I personally am surprised that I ended up here. The reality is I never intended to end up in Russia. I had a flight booked to Cuba, onwards to Latin America, and I was stopped because the United States government decided to revoke my passport and trap me and Moscow airport. So when people ask, why are you in Russia? I say, please, ask the State Department.
The U.S. State Department says Snowden's passport was pulled before he boarded that flight to Moscow, and yet he was somehow still able to leave Hong Kong, a city he had chosen to fly to initially upon leaving the U.S.
A formerly high-ranking American official said to me, if Snowden's equivalent, a Russian kid, was in our hands in the United States, we would be working mightily to, A, befriend him, and absent that, infiltrate what he has, what he knows. What has your relationship been to the host nation? Have you met Putin? Have you spoken with Putin?
Right. So I have no relationship with the Russian government at all. I've never met the Russian president. I'm not supported by the Russian government. I'm not taking money from the Russian government. I'm not a spy, which is the real question. The best way to make sure that, for example, the Russians can't break my fingers and compromise information or hit me with a bag of money until I give them something, was not to have it at all. And the way to do that was by destroying the material that I was holding before I transited through Russia.
People are going to find it hard to believe that President Putin hasn't taken a run at you or what you know. You can state declaratively that that hasn't happened?
Yeah. I mean, the way to think about this is, again, I already know how to deal with counterintelligence. Beyond that, I took nothing to Russia, so I could give them nothing.
You say you're not carrying around any of these materials. You've handed them off. If I gave you a laptop, could you access the documents?
No.
You couldn't remotely, electronically access material. It's gone from your control.
Right. I don't have any control. Let's put it this way. If I'm traveling through Russia, and I know I'm traveling through Russia, and I know they've got a very aggressive, very professional service, and I look like Tweety Bird to Sylvester the Cat, if I look like a little walking chicken leg with all these documents, if I've got control over that, that's a very dangerous thing for me.
All right, so they always break these things at the wrongest places. Pardon me, folks. I should have been watching what I was doing. Here's the beginning of part two. In fact, yeah. You know, I don't like the way this thing is edited. You know, they interviewed him for 4 hours, apparently. And so, of course, it's got to be edited for TV and everything. But, you know, like the part where they say, oh, well, what are you doing in Russia? And he says, well, I was trying to get to Latin America, but you know how they are. They seized my passport. And then Brian Williams cuts in with post-production a clip of the outside of a building or something. As he says, well, this I guess Foggy Bottom, and says, well, you know, the State Department says that they stole his passport while he was still in Hong Kong, and yet somehow he was able to get on a plane. Okay, fair point. But now, so what's his answer to that? But they don't give him a chance to answer that. They skip on. They only added that in as kind of a little, you know, post-production half a smear. Not that it really amounts to much. But, you know, I guess the implication could be that you knew, since your passport was already stolen, that you seized, that you would end up stuck in Russia, right? So what about that, Mr. Snowden? You know what? I think that's actually a pretty damn good question. Now that I put it fairly. But Brian Williams didn't ask him that and didn't give him a chance to respond to that. He only pasted it in after the fact. And left it in a sort of a quarter of an accusation, and I don't buy it. I love this freaking guy, this Edward Snowden. And actually, you know what? I got so little time left for this segment. I'll go ahead and, before I get to part two here, I'll go ahead and say, explain why I was so pleased to find out that it would be Brian Williams interviewing him. I know that sounds crazy. Don't turn the show off. I got an explanation. It's because Brian Williams is absolutely horrible. He's a terrible Republican. I already said this on the show yesterday, didn't I? Or did I just say it to Eric Garris on the phone? He's a terrible guy. And if you listen to the premises of his questions for anybody at any time, if he's trying to be a tough guy and he's trying to really put it to somebody, he has his right-wing talking points, basically. That's where he comes from. That's where he thinks contradictory opinions can be found, and that's just who he is. He's a Republican. And, you know, I don't really know Brian Williams' entire background. Did he start out as just a news actor, an anchor with a hairdo reading teleprompters? Or did he have a background in any kind of journalism at all? I don't really know. But he seems to me like the literate type. He seems to me like the type who could understand a Republican talking point and really internalize it well. As opposed to somebody like, say, I don't know, Sean Hannity, cookie cutter, conservative pundit who actually doesn't know anything, right? Anything. Brian Williams knows enough to be wrong about a lot. But the reason that I value that in him is because for somebody like Edward Snowden, I think that, you know, he will hit better home runs to a fastball. You know what I mean? Go ahead and bring it on. Come on with the accusations. Please don't paste them in after the fact without giving them a chance to respond, editors. But otherwise, bring on the accusations, because there are a ton of them. There's an endless list of anti-Snowden talking points, trying to undermine who this guy is, why he did what he did, and everything else. And so go ahead and throw him some fastballs and let him knock him out of the park. And I think he does great, and I haven't had a chance to see the whole thing yet, but I think he does absolutely great in this thing. And a big part of that is because of who Brian Williams is. If they had brought in someone who, and I don't know all the nightly news anchors by name and whatever, but it's rather Jennings and Brokaw. That's what I know, and they're all gone. But anyway, if they just brought in someone else who wasn't so right-wing, if they brought in typical liberal media, then again, the liberals are primarily interested in defending Obama. So I guess if they were pretty literate liberals, they could also give him a hard time, which, again, I favor. Because I'm so pro-Snowden, I say let him have it and let him respond with the honest truth and he'll win. Because he's awesome. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
What he did for a living. How do you define yourself? Were you trained as a spy? Specifically, I'm talking about this, the titles, systems analyst, contractor. It seems to me spies probably look a lot more like Ed Snowden and a lot less like James Bond these days.
Well, it's no secret that the U.S. tends to get more and better intelligence out of computers nowadays than they do out of people. I was trained as a spy in sort of the traditional sense of the word, in that I lived and worked undercover overseas, pretending to work in a job that I'm not, and even being assigned a name that was not mine. Now, the government might deny these things. They might frame it in certain ways and say, oh, well, you know, he's a low-level analyst. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to use one position that I've had in a career here or there to distract from the totality of my experience, which is that I've worked for the Central Intelligence Agency undercover overseas. I've worked for the National Security Agency undercover overseas. And I've worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency as a lecturer at the Joint Counterintelligence Training Academy, where I developed sources and methods for keeping our information and people secure in the most hostile and dangerous environments around the world. So when they say I'm a low-level systems administrator, that I don't know what I'm talking about, I'd say it's somewhat misleading.
Snowden says his life changed back when he was still a teenager, on the worst day in modern American history.
What did 9/11 mean to you?
I've never told anybody this, no journalist, but I was on Fort Meade on September 11th. I was right outside the NSA. So I remember the tension of that day. I remember hearing on the radio the planes hitting. And I remember thinking my grandfather, who worked for the FBI at the time, was in the Pentagon when the plane hit it. I take the threat of terrorism seriously, and I think we all do. And I think it's really disingenuous for the government to invoke and sort of scandalize our memories, to sort of exploit the national trauma that we all suffered together and worked so hard to come through, to justify programs that have never been shown to keep us safe, but cost us liberties and freedoms that we don't need to give up, and our Constitution says we should not give up.
Then there is this way of looking at it. Our nation had been attacked in this nonlinear way. We were hurting, post-Pearl Harbor hurting. Why not cast the widest net possible? Innocent people around the country all felt the same way. I've got nothing to hide. We've got to find this enemy we can't see.
The definition of a security state is any nation that prioritizes security over all other considerations. I don't believe the United States is or ever should be a security state. If we want to be free, we can't become subject to surveillance. We can't give away our privacy. We can't give away our rights. We have to be an active party. We have to be an active part of our government. And we have to say there are some things worth dying for. And I think the country is one of them.
Like a lot of young men in our country, and especially given the fact that your grandfather was at the FBI, your dad's a vet, like a lot of young men across America, you wanted to join up, and you did.
In 2004, I joined the U.S. Army under the 18X-ray Special Forces Recruit Program. Now, I have to give high respect to everyone in the military, and especially the graduates of those programs, because they are better men than I. I was injured very early on in the program and washed out. And, you know, I readily admit it. I don't hide that.
Snowden reportedly left the military after breaking both of his legs in training.
But the fact is that I tried. You know, I saw what was going on in the world. I believed the government's arguments that we were going to do good things in Iraq, that we were going to free the oppressed. And I wanted to do my part to help share the national burden and create not just a better America, but a better world. The problem was, as time went on, as I rose to higher and higher levels of the intelligence community, as I gained more and more access, as I saw more and more classified information at the highest levels, I realized that so many of the things that we're told by the government simply aren't true. Much like the arguments about aluminum tubes and weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, Colin Powell's speech with the vial of anthrax that Saddam was going to bring against us. The Iraq war that I signed up for was launched on false premises. The American people were misled. Now, whether that was due to bad faith or simply mistakes of intelligence, I can't say for sure. But I can say it shows the problem of putting too much faith in intelligence systems without debating them in public.
Some things you have to squeeze to make sure there's...
No, we're not doing the toilet paper ad. It's Brian Williams' interview of Edward Snowden that ran last night on NBC. And, well, what the hell, man? And I'm having trouble making it skip to the part that I want. Oh, I already got it queued up here. Aha! I think this should be part three right here.
Hosting was in Hawaii. There, he rented a house where he lived with his girlfriend and performed electronic surveillance for the NSA. It was said he took his last position to gain access to the final documents he wanted to steal and then leak.
How long prior to leaving Hawaii did you start to say to yourself, I'm going to gather this, I'm going to put this away, I'm going to expose this?
I think, given the ongoing investigation, that's something better not to get into in a news interview, but I'd be happy to discuss these things with the government.
What is the number? What's the closest you've come to estimating the number of documents?
I will say the 1.7 million documents figure that the intelligence community has been bandying about. The director of NSA himself, Keith Alexander, said just a week ago in the Australian Financial Times, or Australian Financial Review, I believe, that they have no idea what documents were taken at all. Their auditing was so poor, so negligent, that any private contractor, not even an employee of the government, could walk into the NSA building, take whatever they wanted, and walk out with it, and they would never know. Now, I think that's a problem, and I think that's something that needs to be resolved and people need to be held to account for. Has it happened before? Could it happen again?
What didn't you grab? Was there a threshold?
Right. I didn't want to take information that would basically be taken and thrown out in the press that would cause harm to individuals, that would cause people to die, that would put lives at risk. So a good gauge of what information was provided to the journalists is a representation of what you see in the press.
All right, we got to leave it there. We're going to Jacob Hornberger, then we'll be back with more of this poached interview, Brian Williams and Edward Snowden.
The military-industrial complex. The disastrous rise of misplaced power.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here. I'd like for you to read this book, The War State, by Michael Swanson. America's always gone to war a lot, though in older times it would disarm for a bit between each one. But in World War II, the U.S. built a military and intelligence apparatus so large, it ended up reducing the former constitutional government to an almost ceremonial role and converting our economy into an engine of destruction. In The War State, Michael Swanson does a great job telling the sordid history of the rise of this national security state, relying on important first-hand source material, but writing for you and me. Find out how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy all alternately empowered and fought to control this imperial beast, and how the USA has gotten to where it is today. Corrupt, bankrupt, soaked in blood, despised by the world. The War State by Michael Swanson. Available at Amazon.com and at Audible.com. Or just click the logo in the right-hand margin at ScottHorton.org.
We should take nothing for granted.
Okay, guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm going to continue playing that Edward Snowden interview for his... I don't know if we'll be able to get through it all. We got quite a few segments to go here, so we may very well be able to get through it all. And then I got plenty of things to say about it at the end of that. But for right now, I want to go to Jacob Hornberger. He's the founder and the president of the Future of Freedom Foundation at FFF.org. Of course, as you guys know, they put out the journal, The Future of Freedom, which you can subscribe to there at their site. And yes, they bribed me to say that, but I'd have said it anyway, so it's okay. No conflict of interest there. Welcome back to the show, Jacob. How are you doing?
Hey, great. I'm doing fine. It's great to be back. Always an honor to be back.
I'm very happy to have you here. And I got to tell you, when I was watching this Snowden thing earlier, I thought of you. And I don't know if you and I have even spoken about the NSA thing. I have so many interviews now, they all kind of blur together. But I was so reminded of, you know, the kinds of things that you say about the founders and patriotism and the public spirit and all these kinds of things as I was watching him. And I guess I'm old and cynical enough now that I don't really connect libertarianism with Americanism much anymore. But I kind of wish I did, because it makes for great shtick. And I know it's completely synonymous to you. So, you know, I don't know. Tell us, what do you think about, and believe me, I want to get to your great article here, too. This is very important, and we're going to talk about it. But just in general, have you seen this interview with Snowden or otherwise, based on whatever else you know about him? What do you think about Edward Snowden, Jacob?
Well, I have seen the interview, and it was extremely impressive. I mean, his presentation was just extremely impressive. It's almost shocking that a 30-year-old man who doesn't even have a high school degree can express himself so eloquently and so clearly, and he clearly understands the issues, especially on patriotism, that he's able to do what libertarians are able to do. Now, he's clearly no libertarian, but he's able to draw that distinction between patriotism as far as love of country and then this false, fake form of patriotism that statists use called love of government. And we understand as libertarians that the real genuine patriot is the one that stands with his country, and especially when his government is in the wrong, that he takes a stand against the wrongdoing of his government, as compared to this fake form of patriotism that says you should be supporting your government right or wrong, you should never be questioning anything your government is doing, you should be deferring to authority, they're the experts, they're the ones in charge of your life. And so it's very, very interesting to see him making that distinction and causing Americans, hopefully, to think about that distinction, because it's vitally important.
You know, they've done such a, well, I don't know, thorough job. I don't know how effective it is, but they've done such a thorough job of trying to impeach his character rather than, discussing the substance of what he's revealed. You know, it seems like, in a way, it's a diversion to talk too much about who he is and why he did what he did. But on the other hand, you know, even him being able to speak for himself like this on NBC News is hardly enough to really counteract the smearing. I mean, those of us who really respect him, I think, have got to keep up that argument all the time, because, you know, this nonsense about, oh, look, a former KGB agent says that he's just sure that Snowden must be talking with the FSB, and this kind of crap doesn't stop coming. And so, you know, that's their first priority, is not to talk about America's KGB is worse than the KGB ever was when it comes to internal surveillance on the American people, but just to try to scandalize Snowden and make him some bad guy for doing what he did means that they're our defenders. It's not him defending us or warning us about them. It's they're the ones protecting us from him, the traitor who puts us all in danger. And so, as silly as it is, I mean, it sounds completely ridiculous, but then again, you know, liberals and conservatives like believing ridiculous things, Jacob.
Well, but that's standard Washington policy. I mean, it's standard national security state policy. You can go back decades that whenever somebody discloses wrongdoing of the government, the first reaction is, go dig up dirt on the guy so that we can smear him and destroy his credibility on a personal basis. And that way that distracts people's attention away from the substantive issue that is being disclosed. I mean, that's just standard tactics that they use. So I don't think it should surprise us that this is their modus. And so they're going after him on a personal basis. But what's fascinating is that nothing sticks. I mean, this guy is clearly operating out of principle because he truly believed that something was wrong here. He's willing to sacrifice the rest of his life from not being able to come back to his country, possibly prison if they're able to capture him, possibly assassination, because clearly that's a possibility here on the part of the national security state. And yet they try to smear him. They say he's a Chinese spy, a Russian spy. I'm sure they're digging into every single part of his personal life. I mean, I've been willing to bet that the first thing they did went through all the NSA records to see what phone calls and emails they had recorded on this guy in order to dig up dirt on him. And so I don't think that should surprise us, because that's what COINTELPRO is all about. You know, spying on people, recording them, trying to get ways to smear them, and then when they do stand up against the government, they come up with all the evidence. That's why they compile a lot of this stuff on people to do this type of thing.
So that they can go back on you. Oh, now the Hornbergers really made us angry. Let's see what we can dig up. And, you know, he talks about in that interview where Brian Williams hands him the phone. Sorry for the spoiler, everybody. Brian Williams hands him a cell phone and says, "So if I Google the sports score, what can you know about me based on that?" And he goes on and on and on about, you know, your psychological profile and your pattern of life and everything else, just from one simple innocuous, you know, web search. It amounts to a total profile. I mean, when I was a kid, there was like the mythical FBI file. Like, boy, if you're too good at being a government critic, you might get an FBI file. In fact, I knew a lady who had been the girlfriend of a guy who grew some weed in California, and she had an FBI file that she had FOIA'd that was an inch and a half thick, and clearly had FBI agents following her to the grocery store and all around and to her friend's house and to her family and whatever, paying way too much attention, way out of, you know, what could be considered proportional or reasonable for being the hippie girlfriend of some guy growing pot, right? And yet now they have a file that's 1,000 times greater than that on each and every one of us. They don't need to compile it and keep it in a manila folder, right? All they got to do is type in the name Hornberger and enter, and it compiles everything in the world they've got about you, which is beyond your imagination in the first place, all into one place right there at a keystroke. So talk about COINTELPRO. The only thing stopping, if anything is stopping, a total, you know, war against individual American, you know, people who are political but outside the political class, so to speak, it would be some dusty old law that's probably already been reinterpreted in secret, right?
Well, right, and you know, you bring up an interesting point that you know, they, I forget where the article I read, but it was just recently where they said that you can go back to this stuff in the Spanish-American War, when the U.S. government would not permit the Philippines to gain its independence. You know, after it won its independence from Spain, the U.S. government said, "Well, no, we're just going to replace the Spanish Empire. This is now the advent of the American Empire, and you now come under our dominion and control." And so you had this vicious war of independence against the U.S. In the Philippines. And I read that the U.S. had 70,000 index cards on suspected subversives within the Philippine community. Now, obviously, this is back in the, you know, 1901 or so, or long before computers, but that even then they understood. I mean, imagine 70,000 index cards, one for, you know, all these suspected subversives. And so this is the nature of government, that they try to compile as much information on everybody as they can in order to keep the problem of dissent, criticism of government, questioning what the government's doing. They don't want anybody questioning. No regime does. A Chinese regime, Putin's regime, North Korea regime, Cuba, England. They don't want people questioning them. What's the best way to keep that questioning from taking place? We have information on you.
Yeah. And if, all right, we got to stop right there, Jacob. I'm sorry, but you're damn right about that. It's Jacob Hornberger from FFF.org, and we'll be right back in a sec. you hate government, one of them libertarian types, or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton, and I'm talking with Jacob Hornberger. He's the founder and the president of the Future Freedom Foundation. We've been talking a little bit about the background of surveillance states and Edward Snowden. And now to the new article, pull out the impeachment papers. Oh, I love it when anybody says that about any president or anybody that works for any president. Yes, indeed. The impeachment papers, and this is in regards to a specific reference, not a general suspicion or a gut feeling or outstanding question, but a specific reason to believe, I should say, that we are going to find out very soon that there has been one hell of a COINTELPRO operation going on in the United States of America. You want to talk a little bit more about that?
Well, we don't know that for sure yet, but Glenn Greenwald certainly sent out some tantalizing questions and indications in that regard. He said that he's going to be releasing a list of names this summer, that this is going to be his biggest story yet, a list of names of American citizens who have been spied on by the NSA. And then he asked what seemed to be rhetorical questions. Is it, have people been spied on because of their political views or because they actually are terrorists? And then he said, this is going to be a story that's going to, you know, light up the sky like fireworks or something. And so we don't really know what he's suggesting there. But what I'm saying in this article is that if the situation is such that President Obama and the NSA have, in fact, been using the NSA to target people like that was done during the COINTELPRO programs, where they were targeting innocent civilians and with secret spy apparatuses and stuff, that if that's a repeat of that, then clearly that would constitute a high crime and misdemeanor under the provisions of the Constitution that call for impeachment. And we ought to keep in mind that impeachment is just a process that the framer said exists, that you don't have to wait till the next election if you're dissatisfied, that if your high officials commit a high crime or misdemeanor, then it's certainly possible for the elected representatives to put them on trial and, if convicted, remove them from office. It's not a criminal offense. It's just, hey, you no longer serve in this position. So time will tell. We don't know where that is. But what I suggest in my article is that if President Obama and the NSA have been engaged in a COINTELPRO operation, that they ought to come clean about it before Greenwald does this. Because if they wait till afterward, it doesn't have any meaning to it. You know, they say, oh, okay, well, we're sorry we did it. Well, that's no real remorse. And if you really think, if you know you've done something wrong, now's the time to come clean with the American people. And so we'll just have to wait and see. But yeah. I'm saying dust off the impeachment papers just in case, you know, the forms that they use and so forth.
Yeah, well, I sure like the sound of that, and it's good to get out front on this. I support the impeachment of the entire presidency, but maybe that's just me. But, yeah, so here's the thing about this is I absolutely agree with you, but at the same time, it seems to me like it's just as impeachable what they've done in pretending that relevant means anything, when relevant doesn't mean anything, or pretending that imminent means, might possibly happen at some point, when that's not what imminent means. And these kinds of things, when they're breaking the law, basically. Anybody in some private businessman, well, at least that they wanted to persecute, who tried something like that, they'd nail them to the wall, or anybody else, you know, for trying games like that. And when the author of the Patriot Act says, well, that's not what relevant means in Section 215, guys, then they're breaking the law. Never mind the fact that even if you got every damn lawyer in the DOJ to agree about it, it's still in direct violation of the Fourth Amendment. We've already caught them on 10 zillion counts of violating Amendment 4 that forbids them from doing this stuff. So can't we just impeach them and remove them for that?
Absolutely. I mean, and look at all the other law breaking that we had, the telecom scandal, where the administration specifically asked the CEOs of the telecoms to break the law and sell their customers' privacy down the river. You know, they had to end up getting a vote from Congress to grant them immunity from prosecution, just like they did in Chile and Argentina and those other amnesty laws. We got all the torture laws that have been violated. So, yeah, certainly there's been a lot of law breaking. And this is one of the things that I'm disappointed with respect to the Snowden interview and the Snowden position, is it, you know, he's clearly no libertarian. He can't bring himself to a higher level that says a free society has no NSA at all. He keeps talking in terms of that he's working to improve the NSA and he wants to make it a better operation and so forth. That's just nonsense.
Well, and he even says, yeah, if the American people decide that they want it this way, then fine. But no, not fine. The Fourth Amendment forbids it. The national government does not have the authority to do this ever. I don't care if the Martians are coming. They don't have the authority, period.
Exactly. And you can't sell out fundamental rights, even though the majority wants to do it. That's the whole idea of the Bill of Rights, is that, you know, we don't put religion up to the majority vote. Why should we put our privacy up to majority vote?
I actually it better, though, that he's more of a statist and a conservative or a liberal or whatever the hell he is on that, because it makes it more the case that he's one of them. And yet it's still right from even that point of view that they have gone so far beyond their charter that he felt it was necessary to sacrifice his entire future and maybe his life in order to tell us the truth about it. And that, to me, makes it even better. You know, it's like some right-wing Nazi like Dana Rohrabacher being pro-pot. It makes it a lot easier for other conservatives to finally oppose the drug war because they got a little bit of right-wing cover, that sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, it gives him tremendous credibility that he's one of them. He's participating in the system, and he has this crisis of conscience, no doubt about it. What we have to do as libertarians is take the vision of the American people to a higher level, to where we don't want to reform the NSA. We don't want to make it better, as Snowden and others want to do. We want to get rid of it because it has no place in a free society. This is part of the national security state apparatus. The whole apparatus needs to go. It came into existence as an alien form of government, a totalitarian type form of government, because supposedly to fight the Cold War, and I would question even that, but Cold War is over. And it should have gone out of existence along with NATO and the embargo against Cuba and all this other Cold War stuff, because it is a massive infringement on the freedom and privacy of the people. And I think that's the big thing that we bring as libertarians to the table here, is raising people's vision to a higher level of here, of dismantle the thing, get rid of it, abolish it, along with the rest of the national security apparatus, the foreign bases, the big standing army, the CIA. All of these things, Scott, are antithetical to a free society, and that's the message that we libertarians bring.
Well, you know, back to the speculation about this, the big fireworks show coming, the crescendo or whatever, building up to, in the next couple of months, I guess, Greenwald said. The part that you quote, he asked this rhetorical question, are they targeting political critics and dissidents? Okay, so, yeah. Right. But then, so what is he talking about? Is he talking about, it sounds like, if they're going after Occupy and if they're going after Ron Paulians, if they're going after, well, you know, leftists and libertarians or even right wingers who are outside the political class and yet want to somehow participate in politics in America, which is against the rules. It sounds like he's not just talking about I guess if they're doing that, then that means it sort of implies that, you know, they must probably be going after all Muslims too, right? As best as they can, or all Arabs, things like that. If they're going that far where because we know there are already stories about the military spying on anti-war groups way outside of the law on the West Coast, where they were doing, you know, protests at military bases and stuff, but still should have been the civilian authorities. But they've been very happy to play fast and loose with the law the whole terror war long here. And we know the way they talk, just how great of a threat that they consider, even Ron Paulians, who Ron Paul's saying, You know, come on, libertarians, into the Republican Party and make it better and whatever, which is, you know, at least according to the story, allowable, right? That's how the American system is supposed to work. But, you know, I just don't know, man. I mean, when Greenwald talks like this, it sounds to me like they really have been COINTELPRO-ing the hell out of all kinds of dissidents. And then, but my fervent hope and prayer, Jacob, is that they've been spying on congressmen and senators and governors and lieutenant governors and Democrat and Republican private party leaders in the states and that kind of stuff, man. I want to see a gigantic Madisonian intergovernmental fight, you know, about what all they've been up to there. What do you think are the chances of that they've been spying on Dianne Feinstein?
I think there is a possibility, and I think there's a possibility of Ron Paul. And, you know, because, see, they have this mindset that goes from a real terrorist that to all of a sudden a person questioning their policies, and they put them all in the same category. They see them as enemies of the state. And I think that if they've been spying on congressmen, they've been spying on people involved in politics, people in the libertarian movement, the leftist movement, I don't think there's any doubt that that's an impeachable offense. I think it's COINTELPRO all over again. And it will show people that reform never worked. Because remember, those things were supposed to be ended with the church committee hearings and so forth. And it will show people, get rid of your notion that you're going to reform these things. The only solution is to get rid of them.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I guess the reason I'm so excited about the possibility is because I fear that without something like that, if it's just that they're spying on us nobodies, then, you know, the Free Dumb Act, as Marcy Wheeler calls it, is the best kind of reform we're going to get, whatever Mike Rogers wants instead of anything real. And there's a danger that, you know, we're going to end up through the polls and through inaction, you know, sort of accidentally ratify this program. It seems like only by having just some crazy scandal about them spying on governors, potential presidential candidates and senators and things like that, only that could cause enough of an uproar within the state to really get some kind of change here, because I just fear we're going down the slippery slope so fast. Without something like that, then, you know, the best we're going to have is really what Greenwald and Snowden have been saying, which is we need the nerds to make better cryptography and we need regular people to adopt it more and more and just make the courts and make the Congress and make the NSA obsolete by just outwitting them. That'll be all we have left.
Yeah, that's not very much, as far as I'm concerned. It's good. I mean, it's advantageous. Try to protect your own privacy. But I say we got to keep striving for that free society, and that means, you know, a society in which people are free to live their lives without thinking about somebody's watching them, reading their emails, listening to their telephone calls. I mean, freedom is living life without thinking that government might be doing this to you. And the only way to do that is to dismantle the agencies that have the capability to do that. Because once you put your trust in them to, quote, do the right thing, you know darn well they're going to be doing all their little secret stuff, especially if they know they can get away with it. I mean, that's why I think you might be right that they've got files on congressmen and judges or whatever, because they never thought they'd get caught. And when you have omnipotent power like that, you tend to do things that maybe you wouldn't have done ordinarily if you thought you might get caught at it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, man, I sure hope that's true. And this is why I like you so much, is because you always just say, like, hey, everybody, stop for a second and just accept the fact that it does not necessarily have to be this way. They keep making all of this so damned inevitable, but it does not have to be this way. We can be free. And I know that there are people who think, oh, come on, a world without the National Security Agency, a world without the CIA. But you know what happens is they hear you and they go, nah. But then they hear 100 more things about the NSA and the CIA, and then they just can't take it anymore, and they can't escape the fact of the seed that you planted in their mind that, no, really, it's credibly possible to have a free society, and we'd be better off than with this massive, you know, set of departments up there hell-bent on persecuting us in the name of protecting us. And I couldn't agree with you more, but you say it so well, and I believe in the power of your argument to win people over, even if they can't stand to hear talk like that. Later on, they'll know you're right, and they'll come our way. So thank you again for coming on the show, Jacob. I sure appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Always an honor and a pleasure. Look forward to the next time.
All right, everybody. That's Jacob Hornberger, FFF.org, the Future of Freedom Foundation. Pull out the impeachment papers. Hey, y'all, Scott here. You like coffee? Me too. Hey, if you're a true connoisseur, you need to try an amazing new roaster out of L.A., Tonks Coffee. These guys are fanatical about delivering the best coffee beans in the world. They get the beans directly from the growers, roast them, and then ship them to you within 24 hours. They're as fresh as can be. Tonks is a subscription-only service, and they're offering a free sample to listeners to this show. Give it a try. If you like it, you can sign up. Then every 2 weeks, you get a new batch of incredible coffee beans roasted to perfection. If you're hitting the cafe or drive-thru most mornings, this is a better and more economical way to get great coffee. Go to tonks.org/liberty. That's tonx.org/liberty. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. That was the great Jacob Hornberger. We went a little overtime into the in there because I wanted to tell Jacob about how much I respect his work. So you'll be able to hear the whole thing in the archives at scotthorton.org. And now, my friend Phil sent me this clip of Dick Cheney calling Obama the weakest president ever, and I promise to get to that if I can. But I'm hell-bent on playing as much of this Edward Snowden interview from last night as I can for you, in case you haven't had a chance to hear it.
A good gauge of what information was provided to the journalists is a representation of what you see in the press. Now, the NSA and the Defense Intelligence Agency and some of these other organizations have claimed that lives are at risk, that all this military information was out there, that... you know, I took all this information about missiles and warheads and tanks, but we don't see any of that in the newspaper. You know, we haven't seen any stories on that.
Snowden turned over the secret documents to Glenn Greenwald, a lawyer turned journalist, and Laura Poitras, a documentary filmmaker, both of whom traveled to Russia for our interview. In his recently published book, No Place to Hide, Greenwald describes that moment he first met Snowden in Hong Kong.
What did you make of him?
The initial impression was one of extreme confusion because I was expecting to meet somebody in his 60s or 70s, someone very senior in the agency, because I knew almost nothing about him prior to our arrival in Hong Kong.
It was a really intimidating moment. You know, it was the most real point of no return, because the minute you start talking to a journalist as an intelligence officer on camera, there's really no going back from that. That's where it all comes together.
Also, you had this tangible evidence. In effect, he was saying to you, if I wasn't legit, where else would I have gotten this?
Right. I mean, that was certainly a good start to establishing his credibility, and his authenticity was the fact that he was able to produce many thousands of documents from the most secretive agency of the world's most powerful government. But at the same time, there were questions about the authenticity of those documents, the provenance, the motives that led to his taking them, and what it was that he would say when he identified himself to the world as the source.
By handing over the documents to journalists, Snowden says he wanted to put some space between himself and what he himself stole from government computers. He wanted others to break the stories and do the reporting and check to see which stories might cause undue harm.
And that's the reason that the journalists have been required by their agreement with me as the source, although they could obviously break that or do whatever they want. But I demanded that they agree to consult with the government to make sure that no individuals or specific harms could be caused by any of that reporting.
That includes NBC News, which has reported on its own batch of Snowden documents and has a reporting relationship with Glenn Greenwald.
When it comes to specific stories about specific collection programs, about specific targets, these aren't decided by me. These are decided by newspapers.
You see the part of this, and for a lay audience looking on, they know that this came from you. The bulk release to the journalists came from you. They are guessing that you had decisions to make within what you had access to. So then they hear you saying, I didn't put that out. The journalists did.
Right. Now, that's a fair question. You know, anyone can second guess my judgment. And, you know, again, I'm a human being. I could make mistakes. I could make the wrong call. But the reality is the situation determined that this needed to be told to the public.
To your knowledge, there is nothing in what you've handed over to the journalist materially damaging or threatening to the military or national security?
No, there's nothing that would be published that would then harm the public interest. These are programs that need to be understood, that need to be known, that require deep background and context for research. They're difficult to report, but they're of critical public importance.
And just for clarification here, note that Snowden didn't deny turning over military secrets. He asserted instead that they wouldn't be published. Another break when we continue how Snowden justifies what he did.
Some things you have
to... God dang it again with the toilet paper. You hush. I got the other one queued up here.
Snowden, part of a wide-ranging conversation taped a week ago in Moscow. We have already heard some extraordinary things, but as you'll see, he's not done yet.
I'm doing this to serve my country. I'm still working for the government. Being a patriot means knowing when to protect your country.
And sorry for comparing him to Rohrabacher earlier. I didn't mean it that way.
Edward Snowden's last posting was in Hawaii. There, he rented a house where he lived with his girlfriend and performed electronic surveillance for the NSA. It was said he took his last position to gain access to the final documents he wanted to steal and then leak.
How long prior to leaving Hawaii did you start to say to yourself, I'm going to gather this, I'm going to put this away, I'm going to expose this?
I think given the ongoing investigation, that's something better not to get into in a news interview, but I'd be happy to discuss these things with the government.
What is the number? What's the closest you've come to estimating the number of documents?
I will say the 1.7 million documents figure that the intelligence community has been bandying about. The director of NSA himself, Keith Alexander, said just a week ago in the Australian Financial Times, or Australian Financial Review, I believe, that they have no idea what documents were taken at all. Their auditing was so poor, so negligent, that any private contractor, not even an employee of the government, could walk into the NSA building, take whatever they wanted, and walk out with it, and they would never know. Now, I think that's a problem, and I think that's something that needs to be resolved and people need to be held to account for. Has it happened before? Could it happen again?
What didn't you grab? Was there a threshold?
Right. I didn't want to take information that would basically be taken and thrown out in the press that would cause harm to individuals, that would cause people to die, that would put lives at risk. So a good gauge of what information was provided to the journalists is a representation of what you see in the press. Now, the NSA and the Defense Intelligence Agency and some of these other organizations have claimed that lives are at risk, that all this military information was out there, that, you know, I took all this information about missiles and warheads and tanks. But we don't see any of that in the newspaper. You know, we haven't seen any stories on that.
Snowden turned over the secret documents to Glenn Greenwald, a lawyer turned journalist, and Laura Poitras, a documentary filmmaker, both of whom traveled to Russia for our interview. In his recently published book, No Place to Hide, Greenwald describes that moment he first met Snowden in Hong Kong.
What did you make
of
him? Oh, crap,
everybody. Did I just start playing the same damn thing again? I'm sorry. I thought, wasn't that part three? I don't know. Maybe
on the range between ticker tape parade and life sentence, what do you think ought to happen to you if and when you return to the United States?
These are things that no individual should empower themselves to really decide. You know, I'm going to give myself a parade. But neither am I going to walk into a jail cell to serve as a bad example for other people in government who see something happening, some violation of the Constitution, and think they need to say something about it.
You hear often in the United States, why doesn't he come home and face the music?
It's a fair question. You know, why doesn't he? Face charges? But it's also uninformed. Because What has been laying against me are not normal charges. They're extraordinary charges. We've seen more charges under the Espionage Act in the last administration than we have in all other administrations in American history. The Espionage Act provides anyone accused of it of no chance to make a public defense. You are not allowed to argue based on all the evidence in your favor, because that evidence may be classified, even if it's exculpatory.
All right, I'm sorry. We got to stop there. And sorry for the screw-up. Right back. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at councilforthenationalinterest.org.
And so when people say, why don't you go home and face the music, I say, you have to understand that the music is not an open court and a fair trial.
What would you do if you had an audience with the president right now? What would you say?
I would leave advising the president to his advisors. I wouldn't presume to place myself on the level to be able to suggest what his course of action should be.
Would you ask him if you could come home free and clear?
I think that's a decision that he'll weigh and decide based on what he believes would serve the public interest, and I think that's proper and appropriate.
In your mind, though, are you blameless? Have you done, as you look at this, just a good thing? Have you performed, as you see it, a public service?
I think it can be both. I think the most important idea is to remember that there have been times throughout American history where what is right is not the same as what is legal. Sometimes to do the right thing, you have to break a law. And the key there is, in terms of civil disobedience, you have to make sure that what you're risking, what you're bringing onto yourself, does not serve as a detriment to anyone else. It doesn't hurt anybody else. And if you're volunteering yourself to be used as a negative example, if you're volunteering to spend a lifetime in prison, rather than to spend a time in prison, a short period where you'll come out, you'll advocate, you'll emerge stronger, and be able to inspire other people to resist these policies, are you doing good or are you doing bad?
Legal sources tell NBC News that Snowden's legal team has been in contact with the government's lawyers, but negotiations have not yet begun.
Are you looking for clemency or amnesty? Would you like to go home?
I don't think there's ever been any question that I'd like to go home. I mean, I've, from day one, said that I'm doing this to serve my country. I'm still working for the government. Now, whether amnesty or clemency ever becomes a possibility is not for me to say. That's a debate for the public and the government to decide. But if I could go anywhere in the world, that place would be home.
All right, on to the next segment here. I hope.
Some things you have to
God
squeeze
dang
to
me. Bobby. Again with the toilet paper commercials. All right, well, I'm Scott Horton. This is the Edward Snowden interview. Brian Williams interviewed Edward Snowden. And so here's more of that.
Plus, Charmin Ultrasoft
God
is
dang
so
it.
Much...
It said it was over, this commercial, but it lied. All right, so... But still, though, you know, coming up here in a second. I think.
This is a big cultural change. You, in effect, moved to Russia from Hawaii. What is your life like?
You know, it is a major cultural gap, and it requires adjustment. But even though I didn't choose to be here, even though, you know, circumstances really trapped me here, I can adapt. I can live life as an American, more or less. That's the beauty of the Internet, is that we're no longer tied to our communities merely by, you know, physical connections. Right now I'm watching a show, The Wire, about surveillance, which is, I'm really enjoying it. The second season's not so great, but...
What do you make of the fact that President Putin's standing in the world, let's say, has changed so dramatically during the time you have been here?
It's really frustrating for someone who is working so hard to expand the domain of our rights and our privacy to end up stuck in a place where those rights are being challenged in ways that I would consider deeply unfair. The recent bloggers registration law in Russia, I can't think of any basis for a law like that, not just in Russia, but in any country. The government shouldn't be regulating the operations of a free press, whether it's NBC or whether it's some blogger in their living room. There's so much that needs to be defended here in Russia, but I'm limited by my inability to speak Russian and so on and so forth, that it's an isolating and frustrating thing. And I really hope that Russia, the United States, and many other countries will work to push back against this constantly increasing surveillance, against this constant erosion and abrasion of public rights.
Correct me if I'm wrong. The arc of your life is you went from signing up for the military after 9/11, in effect saying you were willing to die for your country, to then telling people you half expected to die via abduction or assassination after what you've done in this instance. That's a pretty dramatic arc since 2003, 2004.
I think that's actually a solid representation of the dramatic arcs that have happened within our government in the same period. Do you think our nation has changed since September 11th? Have our policies changed? Has the manner of our government changed? Has civil engagement with the government changed? Have our politics changed? Are things radically different in terms of partisanship? There have been radical changes within our government.
Do you see yourself as a patriot?
I do. You know, I think patriot is a word that's thrown around so much that it can be devalued nowadays. But being a patriot doesn't mean prioritizing service to government above all else. Being a patriot means knowing when to protect your country, knowing when to protect your constitution, knowing when to protect your countrymen from the violations of and encroachments of adversaries. And those adversaries don't have to be foreign countries. They can be bad policies. They can be officials who, you know, need a little bit more accountability. They can be mistakes of government and simple overreach and things that should never have been tried or that went wrong.
Did you say earlier you were still serving your government?
Yes.
How so?
When you look at the actions that I've taken, when you look at the carefulness of the programs that have been disclosed, when you look at the way this has all been filtered through the most trusted journalistic institutions in America, when you look at the way the government has had a chance to chime in on this, and to make their case, and when you look at the changes that it's resulted in, we've had the first open federal court to ever review these programs, declare it likely unconstitutional and Orwellian. And now you see Congress agreeing that mass surveillance, bulk collection, needs to end. With all of these things happening, that the government agrees all the way up to the president again, make us stronger. How can it be said that I did not serve my government? How can it be said that this harmed the country when all three branches of government have made reforms as a result of it?
All right, that's Edward Snowden talking to Brian Williams on NBC News. They ran about an hour of a four-hour interview. More when we get right back from this break. ScottHorton.org. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world, except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
But many in government say Snowden should pay for what he has done, whether or not he comes home.
What do you miss about home?
I think the only answer to something like that for somebody who's in my situation is, you know, what don't I miss? What would you miss? You know, what wouldn't you miss? I miss my family. I miss my home. I miss my colleagues. I miss the work, because caught up in all these issues, people have, you know, unfairly demonized the NSA to a point that's too extreme. These are good people trying to do hard work for good reasons. The problem that we're confronted with, the challenge that we're facing, is not the working level guy is, you know, some mustache twirling villain who's out to destroy your life. It's the fact that senior officials are investing themselves with powers that they're not entitled to, and they're doing it without asking the public for any kind of consent.
Is what I just heard you feeling bad for the damage to the NSA as a result of what you've exposed from the NSA?
Well, what you need to understand in what I was saying, I guess not what you need to understand, but what I'm saying is not damage to the NSA. It's the sort of conspiratorial thinking that can emerge sometimes when we see the government has committed real and serious abuses that lead us to think they can do no good. And the government does have legitimate programs and legitimate purposes, and they can do great things. The NSA can as well. I think it's important to remember that people don't set their lives on fire. They don't say goodbye to their families, actually pack up without saying goodbye to their families. They don't walk away from their extraordinarily comfortable lives. I mean, I made a lot of money for a guy with no high school diploma. And burn down everything they love for no reason.
So you're a kid from North Carolina, and while I, after this interview, am free to fly back to the United States, you can't. Does that hurt you?
I think nobody could, no American could be prohibited from coming home or traveling anywhere else without feeling a sense of loss. But again, I may have lost my ability to travel, but I've gained the ability to go to sleep at night and to put my head on the pillow and feel comfortable that I've done the right thing, even when it was the hard thing. And I'm comfortable with that.
A good number of Americans, of course, feel that because of what they see as an act of treason, they sleep less soundly at night, fearing this massive leak of secrets has endangered the country. And there is more on the way. Glenn Greenwald says the next story he is going to publish, based on the Snowden documents, may be the biggest yet in terms of impact.
All right, so that was the Edward Snowden interview, as edited by NBC News. Lots of great stuff in there, and, you know, again, I think it's to his credit that he's a pretty centrist sort of guy when it comes to his political views. He doesn't seem to me to be, well, he said he believes in a guaranteed minimum income, and let's see, he said he was pro-choice. This was in his interview with Vanity Fair. And what were a couple other things he said? Anyway, they were, you know, kind of a grab bag, a pretty centrist, acceptable, you know, center-left, center-right positions that people have, so in American politics. So I think it's better that way. It's much better that way than, you know, he always was some kind of hardcore Ron Paulian. The fact that he donated to Ron Paul to me indicates that he has a fair mind. especially when you look at, you know, what he says his other beliefs are that don't fit with what Ron Paul is about. And to hear him talk about, you know, it's really too bad that the NSA kind of looks bad and you know, it's undermining their good work and whatever. Great, you know. I'm with Jacob Hornberger. I say abolish the whole damn thing. But I think he's absolutely honest when he says those things. And I think it's to his credit in the minds of most people anyway. Even if it's the kind of thing that's frustrating to me to see him, you know, not invoke natural rights theory and, you know, whatever else I want him to say that Rothbard would have had him say or Anthony Gregory would have had him say or something like that, you know, I just... Anyway. All right. The great Edward Snowden. So, I've got one invite out to an expert that I want to have on to talk about some NSA stuff. I guess we'll see if that happens. And I have another invite out to somebody I wanted to try to bring on to talk about the war in Libya, but looks like that may not happen. Yeah, so I got some commentary. What's the clock? I got some commentary here on Snowden and then on some other issues as well, Ukraine, Syria, and a lot of other important stuff going on right now. So, again, that you can find that at NBC News. Actually, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm going to save my Snowden stuff and do a whole segment like that. First, I'm going to talk about all the non-Snowden stuff that I absolutely got to get out of the way, no matter what on the show today, especially if I end up getting an interview arranged for the top of the hour. So you need to know this. Starting next Tuesday, I am starting up the show on LibertyChat.com again. That's Ian Chaffee has come up with that thing, and Adam versus the man, Adam Kokesh, is going to have a show on there as well, so I am not sure of the time. But anyway... Adam's going to be on there, and I'm going to be on there, and it's going to be an interview show. It's going to, I guess, not exactly require, but it will. We will be encouraging you to all participate with the guests in the chat room, because they will be encouraged to log into the chat room and see what the chat room is saying and take questions and answers like that. Of course, I'll be asking my own questions, and so... it'll be good. And I think, you know, Ian has said that his audience is a bit more right-leaning, so I may be focusing on more, not right-leaning causes, but maybe more right-leaning reasons why to be right on my causes, which, of course, first and foremost means peace and the Bill of Rights. So that's what the show will be about, and it'll be on starting next Tuesday at... Oh, man, what do we agree? I believe it's supposed to be at 7 my time, 8 o'clock Eastern. I'm in Texas here. But I believe, yeah, it'll be 8 Eastern starting next Tuesday. And I do hope you'll turn out, and I do hope it's a success. I'm going to do my very best. And I've talked with Ian Chaffee, and I really like him. He's a good guy, and he's got a great little website going on over there. And so, right on. Okay, and now another thing I gotta say is, and by the way, remind me to keep saying that all the time. Okay, good. Here's another thing. North Carolina passed a resolution calling for a constitutional convention. And here's the thing about that. That's stupid. But here's the other thing about that. It's extremely dangerous. No matter what you think of the John Birchers, and you may think a lot of things about them, and I would agree with you probably on a lot of them too. I only ever really liked Will Grigg, and now he's one of us and not them, so it's okay. But what they have done for decades is fight on and really work hard, you know, on the state level to get state legislatures to rescind their former proposals for a constitutional convention. One of the things about American history is you have different states for different reasons calling for constitutional conventions. And this is the kind of thing that could lead to a wholesale rewrite of our Constitution, which of course would just give unlimited power to Washington, D.C. It must be opposed at all costs. You want to amend the Constitution, do it one at a time, or you're just blowing your own brains out. And anybody who disagrees with me about that is a stupid idiot. So, North Carolinians, rescind that thing immediately. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future of Freedom Foundation. Edited by libertarian purist Sheldon Richman, The Future of Freedom brings you the best of our movement. Featuring articles by Richman, Jacob Hornberger, James Bovard, and many more, The Future of Freedom stands for peace and liberty and against our criminal world empire and Leviathan state. Subscribe today. It's just $25 per year for the back pocket size print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's The Future of Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. Peace and freedom. Thank you. Hey, I'm Scott. This is my show, Goddamn Scott Horton Show. And yeah, that thing about the Constitutional Convention, the thing of it is, I forget now, I think it's two-thirds of the states. If they ask for one, they get one. And that means all bets are off. Every bit of the Bill of Rights, Article 1, Section 9, anything that they want. Not that there's really any such thing as the rule of law anyway. But it could be worse. If the rule of law outright had the president appointing the governors now, couldn't it? Okay, good. We agree then. And here's the thing. I don't know how many state legislatures right now have outstanding requests or, you know, resolutions for a constitutional convention, but you could just accidentally wake up one morning and find out that one more stupid idiot state legislature asked for one of these things, and that's it. They didn't even think they were going to get it. They were just protesting because they, I don't know, hate gay people so much or whatever their stupid problem is. Think that we shouldn't have ever left Iraq because there are still millions of people there left to slaughter for no reason whatsoever. Or, you know, whatever their grievance is. And then that could be it. That could be the end of any pretense of the former Constitution. And now, I'm not a constitutionalist, man. I'm a Lysander Spooner guy, but this ain't how to get rid of the Constitution. If you think that a bunch of libertarians are going to write a Constitution, you know, what the kind of, you know, Rothbard could tolerate or something, then you're living in a dream world. If there's a constitutional convention, then we will live in complete living death, totalitarian Frankenstein slavery. It's just absolutely, forget about it. Forget about it. The entire economy. We live in absolute totalitarianism. And yes, I plagiarized that from Francis E. Deck. I wasn't trying to pretend like, oh, I made that up. If you ever heard Francis E. Deck, then you know what I mean. If you haven't, then you might not want to, because you might start crying or something. Anyway. Yeah. Living death, slavery. I'd rather not, thanks. North Carolina idiots. Hey, any decent people in North Carolina, you ought to let these guys know that actually it could be a lot worse. You might not get your way at a constitutional convention, and then you might be so despondent about what you did that you'll have to, you know, throw yourself off a pier into a freezing lake or something because of the shame of it, you understand? And I flew over North Carolina. I know they have freezing lakes there. I gave a speech in D.C., and part of it was, you know, of course, had to go to Atlanta. So straight down the coast, ice out the windows. There you go, frozen lake. So you don't want that. Constitutional Convention. And such an obscure thing. Nobody notices, nobody cares. So it can be kind of a steamroller effect where, like, you know, over decades, these things go out and there's no time limit on them. And you could, you know, blam, all of a sudden have a complete revolution within the form, 10 times worse than what George Bush and Obama have accomplished in this century. I mean, imagine literally just, you know, like in Russia where they amended the Constitution, where now the president gets to appoint the governors. You want that? You think you hate your governor now? Wait till he's just a outright, you know, on-duty CIA officer. The American Gestapo. So, no constitutional conventions. And it sounds obscure and it sounds stupid, but if you live in North Carolina and it's possible that you could contact these guys and have the slightest effect on doing anything about this, try to change the minds of the proponents, then please do it for everybody's sake. Thank you. Okay, good. Now, here's the other thing I got to get rid of here before I go back to Snowden. And that is, I need advertisers for the show. I love donors too, Donors are great. And when I get a, hey, you just received a subscription donation for $5, ching, ching, man. I love that. $5 donations are beautiful things. Bigger ones also. But what I really need is business. I need advertisers. So I put a call out like this the other day. I got an email that said, hey, I have a business. Maybe we should, talk about a deal. Perfect. That's what I think too. So maybe you like this show. Maybe you want to help support. Maybe you want to take a chance that this show could help your business for the price. It's a pretty reasonable price. Shoot me an email. I'm scott@scotthorton.org. And we'll see if we can do something. And it doesn't have to be a business either. You know, I'm trying to get Veterans for Peace back on board because I love those guys, man. I want to advertise for them so bad and not for the money because, believe me, they ain't going to pay me but a pittance anyway if they do it. It's going to be less than a pittance. But I think it's just great to support organizations like that. We need absolute... We need the... there is no ceiling on the number of Veterans for Peace that we need in America. You know? Again, with the Snowden thing about... You know, was one of them and saw the light kind of deal. Because if you've just been a radical your whole life, then the people who've been part of it their whole lives, they have a lot of trouble seeing, you know, hearing from somebody like me, maybe. Maybe somebody like you. But anyway. So, support the show. And people email me and they say things like, man, I love your freaking show. Yesterday, a guy sent me a tiny bit of, a substantial bit of money, actually. And he said, hey, I'm a fan of the show. I've listened a million times and this is still, you know, only a penny per hour I've listened to you or whatever. So, da, da, da. Man, I love those. That's absolutely great. And I really appreciate it. And yes, it makes a difference. It's not like I'm eating, filet mignon over here or anything. It really helps to keep the show going. So, if that's your gag too, you like the show like the other people like the show, he could do 20, maybe you can do better. Maybe you have a group or like my friend over there at Veterans for Peace who's on the board there and trying to convince the rest, maybe you could do that at your group. I don't know. If you're really, 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 if you're an extremely libertarian candidate for something, but nah, I don't want to talk to anybody who wants to advertise for me off. Can't do that. I guess if you're running a opposition to a ballot measure somewhere, you know, some yes or no vote, I guess you could buy ads for that. I don't know what all the rules are. Anyway, support the show, god dang it. I'm Scott at scotthorton.org, and you can also go to scotthorton.org/donate. Okay, thanks. And then the other thing is... I don't know, man. I guess I should just go back to talking about Snowden. I mean, there's Syria and Ukraine, but I guess I'll let that wait because the Snowden thing's more important. So, well, I mean, hell, I don't know. It's a Snowden kind of show, so I'm going with that. It's the most in-depth interview. I sure wish Laura Poitras had come out at least with, I guess she's working on the documentary with all the scoops and all the Snowden and everything, but it's too bad that we didn't get to see the... her movie's version of Snowden before Brian Williams got the scoop. But still, that's cool. Can't wait to see that. But here's another thing. I already mentioned how unfair it was that they dubbed in Brian Williams later, contradicting Snowden on the passport issue, but not giving him a chance to respond to that because they just punched it in later. Instead of saying, you know what, damn, I should have asked him, oh yeah, but what about the thing where the state says that your passport was already gone when you were still in Hong Kong, that it had already been seized then, or, you know, deactivated or whatever, suspended. But instead of saying, oh well, I guess that's a failure, they go in and then they completely... try to spin it against him, but they don't give him a chance to respond to that. Then they go back to the actual interview and him answering different questions, which I thought sucked, but anyway, worth repeating to me. And then the other thing is, Jacob Hornberger was saying, and I think this is really important, especially, you know, I like to imagine there are new people listening to the show all the time, especially young people listening all the time, that you will see the pattern if you haven't noticed already of the way the government, and they're really kind of... It's like high school gossip, kind of ridiculous sort of levels, you know? The way that they treat those who cross them. The way they try to demonize. Now, what did they have on Snowden? This guy who is their poster child for what you're supposed to do if something bad happens. You're supposed to sign up for the Army and or CIA and or DIA and or NSA to serve the state, to protect the country. Here's this guy that they hired in those roles to do that, at least supposedly. And then they turn right on him and say he's the lowest scum of the earth in the world. Oh, this guy, he's a dropout. In fact, let's do this right now. Forget the rhetorical this or that. Let's try. Snowden, dropout. Oh, 200,000 results. What a lie, Google. You damn liars. I've seen the number way higher than that. Anyway, here he was. He was giving speeches to the leaders of the DIA, the CIA, the NSA, about how to secure their information in hot zones, he said. This low-level nobody know-nothing, they said. Phone records, financial and location data, Prism, Tempora, X-Keyscore, Boundless Informant. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for offnow.org. Now, here's the deal. Due to the Snowden revelations, we have a great opportunity for a short period of time to get some real rollback of the national surveillance state. Now, they're already trying to tire us by introducing fake reforms in the Congress. And the courts, they betray their sworn oaths to the Constitution and Bill of Rights again and again, and can in no way be trusted to stop the abuses for us. We've got to do it ourselves. How? We nullify it at the state level. It's still not easy, but the OffNow project of the 10th Amendment Center has gotten off to a great start. I mean it. There's real reason to be optimistic here. They've gotten their model legislation introduced all over the place, in state after state. I've lost count, more than a dozen. You're always wondering, yeah, but what can we do? Here's something. Something important. Something that can work if we do the work. Get started cutting off the NSA support in your state. Go to offnow.org. Hey, I'm Scott. I bit my cheek, man. Hey, I'm Scott. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. Hour three here, and back to the Snowden matter. If you haven't seen the interview of Edward Snowden on NBCNews.com, it ran last night, and I watched it this morning, and then I replayed it on the show earlier, in case you missed that. You can go find it at NBCNews.com. And it's not the point. The NSA material is the point. Whoever Edward Snowden is, but still, it's important who he is for other reasons, even though besides the point of what he, the substance of what he actually revealed, which is far more important, but still, so I want to talk about him a little bit and some of the things that we learned in there, and, you know, I actually kind of quit taking notes, but there are a few things I wanted to comment on here and see if maybe I remember some others. First of all, I want to comment on the news here, the way they do this both sides of the story thing. First, they say to him, oh, man, major damage. They say major damage. And he says, yeah, but the thing is, they always say that about everybody who crosses them, and they haven't provided any proof of it. So, why take their word for it? Doesn't seem right. And he allowed for the possibility that could happen. But, you know, he doesn't think so, and come on. But then Brian Williams still has to end with, oh, treason. A lot of people think that he's guilty of treason. Well, why not go ahead and report instead of what a lot of people think? Why don't you go ahead and report that Snowden is factually correct, that no one has ever provided any proof that he did anything that damaged the interests of the United States of America or sabotaged the National Security Agency or American safety or any other thing. We are here to report to you tonight that this remains, 1 year after the initial disclosures started coming out, nothing but an accusation that has never been backed up by a single one of these stinking pigs. How about reporting that instead of reporting what a lot of people think? Oh, yeah, you got to have both sides of the story, huh? How about here's what the facts are? You know, I remember, I forgot who it was hosting the thing, where on Fox News, Bill O'Reilly was hosting it, and he sang to Bret Baier. One of the, he's actually a reporter. He's not a news anchor. He's actually a reporter. I'm not saying he's a wonderful journalist, but I'm just saying if you know who I'm talking about on Fox News. And O'Reilly's saying to him, look, man, this whole Obama born in Hawaii thing, I mean, what is the official position of Fox News on this? And Brett Baer says, we are reporting to you that Barack Obama was born in Hawaii and there's no credible reason to believe otherwise. That is our journalism, and we are saying so, reported the Fox News reporter. And then Bill O'Reilly said, all right, then. That's it. And, of course, because he didn't want to get into it because he knew how stupid it was. He didn't want to get dragged down into it, whatever the hell. But Brett Baer didn't even bother saying, we are reporting to you that many people have suspicions. He said, no, it is the position of Fox News that that is not a fact that he was born in Kenya at all. It is a fact he was born in Hawaii based on the multiple reasons we conclude this, he reported. But Brian Williams isn't as good as Brett Baer and Bill O'Reilly. When it comes to this, he said, she said, crap. Well, you know, as long as I can spin it and try to hurt him, that's what really counts, right, Brian? Well, a lot of people call it treason, yeah? A lot of who? You? Keep telling people that it is, regardless of the facts? Is that the problem? Couldn't be, right? Old Brian Williams and NBC, they're just a mirror, man. Who says they're shaping society? Except their commercials. Lean forward. Tell everybody what to do and why. All right. And then another thing that I want to say about this is all this stuff about, hey, man, those people who are going to work there every day at the NSA, they're doing good work, et cetera, et cetera. That's not right. And he admitted himself when he's defending himself about the wars, that this whole thing in Iraq was wrong. It was on false pretenses, and that helped make him stop believing in the government and this and that. Well, you know, it wasn't Greenwald and Scahill that broke the story of the use of metadata to target people for drone strikes and for other means of murder in the Afghan war. It was Gareth Porter. The heroic Gareth Porter, and he won the Martha Gellhorn Award for his journalism in truthoutdoubt.org back in 2011. And, well, he wrote the reports in 2011. I guess they actually gave him the award in 12, if I remember it right. But that was what his extremely substantial reporting was about, using the telephone metadata to try to figure out who's who and who knows who and how and then kill them. And yet what we're talking about basically is tasking a computer with coming up with a conspiracy theory. They, you know, have something like a what they call a threat matrix, and there are different terms for it. But what it basically means is it's a computer algorithm. Your judgment, the officer's judgment, the foot soldier's judgment, the trigger man's judgment becomes at least somewhat removed. And the computer now assigns a score. And they joked about this in the extensive article in the New York Times, which was a very sanctioned story by the White House. It was Barack Obama's top 24 national security advisors talked to the New York Times about this program. This is where we learned the phrase Terror Tuesday, where they sit around with the president's kill list and he puts thumbs up and thumbs down on some of them. But they also talk in there at length about these... Well, not in as much length, about the so-called signature strikes. And they talk about, they joke about it, but it's not funny that they're killing people for doing jumping jacks. Listen, if one guy from the air seems to be the leader of seven guys, and they get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and apparently start doing what he says, which includes all of these, you know, calisthenics or whatever, then that's the kind of thing that terrorists do. Blam, and they kill them. A signature strike doesn't mean Barack Obama himself, His Highness, High Lord and Emperor, had signed a signature authorizing the strike, and so it's beyond reproach. No, it means that guy was swinging on the monkey bars, and he seems from here to be too old to be swinging on monkey bars. And we all know about that file footage of Al-Qaeda swinging on monkey bars, so off with his head. Hellfire missile from the air. Comes and tears this human life apart in a signature strike. And this is the kind of thing that goes on in a lot of places in the world. But Gareth Porter put it together for truthout.org 3 years ago. And, you know, Scahill and Greenwald, of course, collaborated on what should have been, you know, acknowledged by them to have been a follow-up to Gareth's reporting about now we know even more about this metadata and how they use it. And they know for sure that they're killing innocent people, that all they're doing is tracking SIM cards around, and they really don't have much of an idea of what they're, of who they're doing what to. And so that's some very important journalism. I do hope you'll look at it, and it severely undermines the claim of Edward Snowden that these people are doing a noble job the best they can, but sometimes, you know, things get a little out of hand without proper checks and balances and whatever. No, they're aiding and abetting the mass murder of innocent people. That's what they're doing. They're killing people. They're not defending the United States from terrorists. They are defending a world empire from anyone who would oppose it anywhere in the world. You know, I might even become a minarchist if I really thought that the U.S. government and its intelligence agencies had a defensive posture and they really only use the NSA to keep people from coming and killing Americans in the United States. But that is a damned lie, and you know it, and everybody knows it. America is the world empire. And in fact, as everybody else knows this too, all empires self-destruct and commit suicide and destroy their home societies, and that's what we're seeing, is the blowback from all this empire and all this state of war on our home population. Hey, y'all, Scott here. Ever wanted to help support the show and own silver at the same time? Well, a friend of mine, libertarian activist Arlo Pignatti, has invented the alternative currency with the most promise of them all, QR Silver Commodity Discs, the first ever QR code 1 ounce silver pieces. Just scan the back of one with your phone and get the instant spot price. They're perfect for saving or spending at the market. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one. That's scotthorton.org/donate. And if you'd like to learn and order more, send them a message at commoditydiscs.com or check them out on Facebook at /commoditydiscs. And thanks. All right, you guys, welcome back to The Thing here. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm at scotthorton.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Talking about the Snowden interview here and some of my thoughts on it for what they're worth. I think it's important to go back to his reaction to September 11th. As he says, for the first time there, he was at Fort Meade on September 11th, right outside NSA headquarters for whatever reason. And I think was living in Maryland at the time. But anyway, he said he was afraid. Well, he didn't really admit to being afraid, but he thought that he had reason to believe that his grandfather, an FBI agent, was in the Pentagon, maybe a counterintelligence officer or something, in the Pentagon at the time of the attack. And so he didn't really elaborate on that, but we can imagine how he might have felt about his grandfather almost being murdered in that thing. And so he went to be, you know, like, you know, a couple of million other young men went to go join up to help the government in its effort to make the world a better place. As he put it, you can tell he really believed in it. He was a teenager at the time of 9/11. So, you know, I'll cut him some slack for being so immersed in this nonsense that he bought it, that that was what the U.S. government had in mind at all, doing the right thing by the people of Iraq or anybody else on this planet. But he was a true believer, and then what came to happen, as he explained it, and it's as clear as day, and it's no cover story, come on, man, enough of this nonsense. He was watching how they do their work, and he said, man, this just isn't right. And he got more and more fed up with it. And again, Brian Williams, not again, you should note, we should note, Brian Williams, reporter, actually interrupted the interview, at the end of one of the segments, he says that they have multiple sources. NBC News is reporting to you. They have multiple sources inside the government that confirm that Edward Snowden did, in fact, send at least one email to the general counsel. That means the boss of the NSA's lawyers saying, we have real problems here, sir, and I think that it needs to be looked at, blam, etc. He was a whistleblower. They've been lying their asses off, recall, that, oh, if he's a whistleblower, how come he didn't go up the chain of command? He did go up the chain of command. What was he supposed to do? Go to Dianne Feinstein, who authorized this? Yes, the U.S. Senate Intelligence Committee would have taken really good care of him. He'd be right now between Ted Kaczynski and Ramzi Youssef in the Supermax in Florence, Colorado. You know, or worse, you know, tortured in a South Carolina brig like Jose Padilla. But anyway, so the point is, and if you watch The Frontline, maybe you get a headache when you read and you just can't do it. Go look at The Frontline thing. It's a two-part special about the NSA program here, and it's flawed, but they do a great job of explaining the continuity of the program, you know, all the way through the terror war here. And one of the things that they talk about is this great program called Thin Thread that had the ability to, you know, use algorithms to really narrowly pick out important intelligence information and filter out everything else and encrypt it and keep it all anonymous and protected. And they got rid of that and replaced instead with Trailblazer. And, you know, this was, you know, I guess multiple whistleblowers had to do with this case. Drake and I believe Wiebe and Benny. I forgot what all exactly who leaked what from those three guys. But anyway, it was a giant boondoggle. It was a giant waste of money. It completely broke the law and violated Americans' privacy, and it was completely unnecessary, and everybody who knew about it knew that, and yet they kept doing it. And they had the authority, they had the authority first of the president's will by the divine right of the temple of something or other. I don't know, man. The inherent and plenary authority that no one can find in the Constitution, but trust us, it's there somewhere between the words commander and in the commander-in-chief clause, which states that he shall be the commander-in-chief of the armed forces when called into the actual service of the United States by the Congress. But anyway, and then they authorized it 100 other ways with different excuses and memos and laws. And it's all completely unconstitutional. And even the laws they've had to deliberately misinterpret and judicial opinions that they've had to completely, deliberately interpret way out of proportion in order to justify what they're doing. And the whole thing is criminal. And that's why he did what he did. It's as simple as that. It's as black and white an issue with that as that. He was in the NSA. He saw them going way outside of what their charter was and what are supposed to be the restrictions on what they do, and even beyond, you know what, take for granted. I'm no lawyer, Scott Horton. For all I know, Section 215 of the Patriot Act really does say they can do whatever they want, even though the author of it denies that that's what relevant means, anything in the whole wide world that they feel like. But, you know, hey, I'm not a lawyer, so, hey, maybe that is true. Well, still, Snowden judged that all of this is egregious enough against what he thought was how it was supposed to work, that he decided that you needed to know. In a way, you know what he is? He's like Carol Quigley. He says, I've known about these guys for so long, but it's almost as though the entire history of this era is going to be written, and yet they won't be in it. The men who decided on the war were the same men who reported it. And there's a problem there, and so I gotta put down some of this history where people can get at it, because that's a historian's job. Right? It's the same kind of thing. Hey, listen, Americans, Edward Snowden, as Jacob Hornberger said, the non-libertarian, said, Americans, you need to know about this. If you want to keep it this way, go ahead. I regret that he says that, but okay, fine. Actually, it's fine that he says that. If that's his point of view, it's not mine. All of you don't have the right, you know, combined don't have the right to violate my rights. So simple as that. Should be. But anyway, he just said, listen, I just want to let you know so that you can decide. And so, you know, here in a little while, I'm going to get back to what should be the main subject matter here. And that is what we've actually learned from the NSA files. The problem is, I'm not very good on this stuff, but I'm trying, and I swear to you, one of these days, I'm going to put aside time like reading a book and go back through all the journalism on all these leaks all year long and try to do a better job of getting my head around the particulars. I mean, I believe I understand it, but I don't believe I understand it well enough to really teach it. And so, I mean, obviously, I'm not the ones and zeros kind of computer expert, but, you know, if I can learn this stuff well enough, then I can be better at explaining it to you guys enough that you'll reject it. Because I oppose it. So, I'm going to try to do my best to at least, you know, get back to a little bit of what we have learned, because I think people forget, you know? Oh yeah, there was a story about how they keep track of everywhere we've been, everywhere we go, our every association for the last 5 years in the form of our cell phone location data. I've forgotten that one, but that is the worst thing that ever happened in America, right? How could that be? More like that. More on Snowden revelations, and then, you know, hopefully some other stuff too when we get back. It's the Scott Horton Show. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for CashIntoCoins.com. So you want to buy some Bitcoins? CashIntoCoins.com makes it fast, easy, and safe to get Bitcoins. Just deposit the money into their account at any of the major banks they support, and then just email them a picture of the receipt and your Bitcoin address, and you get your Bitcoins. Almost always the same day it clears. In a tough, competitive new market, CashIntoCoins.com has the advantage. A great system and great customer service to keep you coming back. That's CashIntoCoins.com. Just click the link in the right margin at ScottHorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. And hey, it worked. I got Joshua Eaton on the line. And he's the guy who, one of the two guys who put together this great timeline of all the Snowden revelations at america.aljazeera.com. Just Google Al Jazeera NSA timeline and it'll come right up. And it's links to all the stories. And then, of course, all the stories linked to all the documents. Welcome back to the show, Joshua. How are you doing? Welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be on.
Very good to have you here. If you could, I know it's a very short notice kind of a interview here, but I hope that we could start with the original Verizon metadata story and the Prism story, and then you could, hopefully take us through about 10 minutes here and highlight the most important things that we have learned about the abuse of our rights by the National Security Agency in the last year since the Snowden revelations came out. And I sure do appreciate it.
So the original story was a FISA court order, and it was the first FISA court order that had ever been leaked. And that was a court order actually from the FBI requiring Verizon to hand over customer metadata on U.S. customers on a daily, ongoing basis to the NSA. So that was obviously a huge bombshell that was followed next day by the Prism story, which revealed that the NSA has access to sort of direct access to user data from some of the biggest tech companies in the United States: Yahoo, Google, Facebook, Skype, as well, which is owned by Microsoft.
Well, now, so there was some controversy about, you got the Prism story all wrong. What was that, and how did that iron out there? And I guess it was the Washington Post that took the criticism more than Greenwald. Is that correct?
Yeah, the Washington Post and Barton Gellman took the criticism. And this is something that's been bumping around for a while. Glenn Greenwald addresses it in his new book, No Place to Hide. It's one of the things he addresses. He also addresses the relationship between the FBI and the NSA a lot more carefully. So what people were saying was, you know, this was just sort of like a convenient way for companies to respond to court orders. So if a company got a court order or got a national security letter asking for a particular user's data, compelling them to hand over a particular user's data, they would just put it in this kind of like electronic lockbox that that NSA would then have access to. So there's still this sort of confusion bumping around. There's still arguments about it, but in the case that, that Greenwald's made is that this is really, it's more than that. That this is a database of user data, and it's much more direct access than what the critics are arguing.
It sort of sounded like, and I'm no computer genius at all here, and I'm not certain of your level of expertise either, so I don't mean to, you know, put too much on you for as far as the explanation of how it works or anything here, Joshua, but it sounded to me like the critics were saying, well, it's sort of like a FTP program, but the government says, hey, upload us this and upload us that, would you? And then, but the argument was, no, it's much more like a two-way street, and the NSA really does have FTP access and can root around on the other side of that wall, right?
Yeah, that's the basic argument. And to be fair, I haven't looked in really close detail. I've been sort of tracking the leaks broadly, so I haven't looked in really close detail.
I understand. Yeah, I mean, and it is all very complicated stuff. So when it comes to that kind of thing, you know, it's perfectly fine to pass on. And then, can you tell us then, what about X key score? I know what it sounds like it means.
Yeah, so X key score is it's a series of, I think, when the slides were made, 500 servers around the world that are collecting data, mostly from like fiber optic networks, these huge backbones, fiber optic backbones that carry a lot of the world, and not just internet data and telephone data, but also things like financial transactions. So like ATMs communicating with one another, things like that. And so they tap these, and X key score sorts it into these various databases that the NSA has. And the databases, they sort of get more and more fine-grained. There's some of them that have full take data, which is just sucking up everything, vacuuming up everything from these cables. Some of them have content, some of them just have metadata, and then some of them have data from particular, what they call strong selectors, which is targets, those particular people they want to look at.
Mm-hmm. And then, now, it seems like they sort of made Prism beside the point, right, when they figured out how they could just hack Google servers and Yahoo servers and I guess whoever else, as they transfer. You know, it's all automated kind of processes, right? Amazon or whoever, they keep their data backed up in different places around the world, and then they're constantly transferring information back and forth and maybe changing which server which data is sitting on at any given time or whatever. And it turned out that the NSA was just reaching right in and scooping up all of that traffic, you know, from those gigantic networks of, you know, the kings of the internet, Google and Yahoo, right?
Yeah, so they were tapping into, so there's the links between customers and the companies, which are with Google especially now, not, I don't think with Yahoo, but with Google by default is encrypted with SSL. So when you see HTTPS in your address bar, that S means it's a secure encrypted connection. But what wasn't encrypted is Google, Yahoo, Microsoft, which is the three companies that were involved, they have these data centers all over the world. And the data is, you know, your email inbox isn't just stored at one data center. That data is stored at multiple data centers, and it's a weighted network. So, you know, the information doesn't exactly take the most direct geographic route. It's not like you get the information from the data center that's physically closest to you. It takes whatever route fastest or whatever route has the least activity on it at the moment. And so this information is always traveling back and forth between these Google data centers, Google, Microsoft, Yahoo. And for a long time, that wasn't encrypted. It was carried over these fiber optic cables that these companies leased, and the NSA tapped those and was just sucking up full take information. And they were doing it out of the country because that allowed them to avoid some of the legal restrictions if they'd done it in the U.S. But there was almost certainly Americans' data scooped up in that.
All right, and then... I'm sorry, go ahead.
And by the way,
Don't go ahead, but please stay through the break and give us one more segment. Joshua, can you, or do you got to go?
No, I can do that.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I'm sorry, we got to take this break. It's a hardwired thing. But it's Joshua Eaton. He helped to create the timeline of all Snowden NSA revelations and stories since last year. It's at Al Jazeera, america.aljazeera.com. We'll be right back. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to The Thing here. I'm Scott Horton, and this is my show, and I'm talking with Joshua Eaton, and he and a guy named Ben Piven put together this thing at america.aljazeera.com. It's the timeline of Edward Snowden's revelations, and, you know, as you know, a great many of these stories have been reported in The Guardian, but also in The Washington Post, The New York Times, ProPublica, The Intercept, obviously. But also El Globo down in Brazil, and who knows what, how to say it, in Norway and all over the world. These stories have been reported. Most of those are, you know, the publications around the world are bylined by Glenn Greenwald there. And so it's a whole hell of a lot to keep track of. And the Electronic Frontier Foundation also has a really great list of all the documents and all the news stories here. But they got this great timeline. Just type in Al Jazeera NSA timeline. It'll come right up, and then you can pick and choose. They got them all here for you. It's just great. And I have Joshua Eaton on the line, and we cannot possibly go through them all, but we're trying to go through, you know, what are the most notable of these. And in fact, I think I probably need to quit interrupting and actually let you answer the question of which ones do you think are the most notable ones, Joshua, because I keep coming up with basically the names of the programs and the ones that stuck out most to me, but I didn't put together the timeline of all of them, so there may very well be some good ones I'm skipping and God knows what, so the floor is yours.
Thank you. I think it's important to focus on some of the big sort of issues we've learned about from...
Sure.
From the leaks. One is, you know, we know that, and, you know, probably we could have guessed this, but we've learned a lot of details about U.S. NSA espionage against our allies, like foreign diplomats, embassies in the U.S., including embassies of our allies, international organizations like the European Union, the U.N., even... international nonprofit organizations. Like, there's a story that they've been surveilling UNICEF, some private nonprofits, some suggestion that maybe some more revelations are going to come out about that. And we've also learned a lot about not just U.S., but British and Canadian and Australian surveillance against industry, a lot in the tech industry, including informants in the tech industry, really targeting telecom companies because they want to get access to their networks, really targeting systems administrators, targeting technology manufacturers, intentionally weakening encryption standards, other technology standards, finding out about serious security flaws and withholding that information, which of course puts everyone at more risk. And then these stories that came out in O Globo about Canada spying on Brazilian mining interests, for example. The U.S. Through, I think it was Norway, spying on Russian energy companies, including government-owned energy companies and private energy companies. And then there was a story that hasn't gotten much play in the U.S., that Australia was even passing surveillance information on to Australian companies to help them in trade negotiations. There's been a lot of this sort of stuff that's come out.
I'm sorry, speak up a little bit there, Joshua.
Can you hear me fine?
Yeah, you sound fine when you're speaking nice and loud.
All right. So there was a story in the New York Times about the U.S. and Australia monitoring some trade disputes that were going on with Indonesia, trade disputes the U.S. was having with Indonesia. Mm-hmm. Australia was passing signals intelligence to the U.S. about it. And this U.S. law firm got swept up in the dragnet. But there's this throwaway paragraph in the middle nobody talked about much.
Really?
And it just said, some other documents provided by Edward Snowden show that the NSA regularly shares information with the Department of Agriculture. Right? I mean, this is so far from counterterrorism.
But it's extremely important, right? We're talking about bazillions of dollars worth of global trade in agricultural products, and this means a lot, and two specific interests. And it's funny that once you get talking about economic espionage here, you got so many examples, you just can't stop. That's what the empire is all about at the end of the day, isn't it? Or halfway, anyway.
You know, I wrote a piece for Al Jazeera America back in, I think it was February, looking back at 8 months of the revelations, this analysis piece. And what I said was, you know, a lot of people were wondering before, but have really started to wonder now, looking at these leaks, you know, is this about national security or is it about national dominance? It's about sort of hegemony. And I think that's really, really the key question, right? It's about sort of maintaining economic, political, military superiority.
Full spectrum dominance, that's the name of the game. Benevolent global hegemony. That's what Robert Kagan says. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And that's part of the problem is still too damn, after all the progress we've made on this front, it's still just too politically incorrect to use the word empire and just admit that there's something corrupt going on around here. You know, it used to be people be proud of their empires, but Americans have a different legacy. And so they have to deny that this is one. But if they could just use the E word in context of the revelations that we're learning about the NSA, I think you're right. You know, it would go a long way toward, you know, getting people to understand the difference between national defense and, you know, the Pentagon.
And I think Snowden has said this point blank, that we really have to distinguish between national security and national interests. And, you know, when you start talking about, instead of what's in the national security, what's in the national interest, that's such a broad category. I mean,
Well,
you
that clearly includes
in
what's in the interests of some politically connected people at the expense of others in America and around the world. There is no national interest, and there's certainly not one that any of these people believe in. It's, you know, look at the Trailblazer Thin Thread thing inside the NSA that we've already known about, where, yeah, Thin Thread may be great, but we want to waste a lot of money on this thing that's not because of the money, because they're all a bunch of criminals. Simple as that, you know, it is. It's a corrupt empire. Anyway, here's the one that is still, you know, if I had feelings, this is the thing that would really get to me, and that is that they keep the location data from everybody's cell phone going back 5 years. Do I have that right? Because I saw Bill Maher call Edward Snowden crazy for saying what I thought he was referring to this when he said they know all of your associations and relationships, all of them. You know, going years back, and Bill Maher goes, oh, what is he talking about? The guy sounds like a lunatic. But he didn't let Greenwald respond to that specific point. But I thought what he meant was they know if Joshua Eaton and Scott Horton ever ride in a car together, ever sit in a living room together, ever attend an event together. And if they want to go back and check, they can go back and check, because both of us keep our cell phone in our pocket all day and all night long. And everybody does, and they know it. Is that really right, that they have that data on all of us?
Well, so they're definitely keeping location data outside the U.S. There are specific countries where they're keeping, they just have huge databases of location data, and it's really, really fine-grained, so that they even have tested using it to tell if U.S. diplomats or intelligence agents are being followed. Because they can see, using the location data, okay, these are the diplomat's cell phones, this is another cell phone that is tailing them. And so it's that fine, you know, in a busy city, they can tell if two people are walking side by side.
Yeah. All right, I'm sorry we got to leave it there, but everybody please go and check out this great timeline. Just type in Al Jazeera timeline, NSA, you'll find it. It's put together by Joshua Eaton. Thank you very much for your time on the show. I really appreciate talking to you again.
Thank you so much for having me again.
All right, everybody. See you tomorrow. Thanks.